Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
Thank you, Doma T. As they say sometimes, a lot to unpack there in the news and sports. And Sam, you're going to give us your five NFL picks of the week, as you do on Saturdays, a little later in the show.
Yes, sir.
We'll do that in the 11 o'clock hour. By the way, how are we doing? We've picked 10 games so far this year after 2 weeks of play.
We are 6-3-1. We're in the top 7% in the world.
Okay, yeah, which is very good, but that doesn't get it done now, does it, Sam?
Not good enough.
I appreciate all
you are so cruel.
I didn't make the rules.
So I know. And
are you surprised that the president went after Kaepernick and the hitting rules in the NFL? He's essentially saying that all of this business about protecting players from concussions makes the game too soft and they've ruined it. I'm not making that up. That's the president's take. And the crowd went bananas last night.
I'm not surprised by anything anymore, honestly.
You're not surprised by anything he says anymore. I'm still surprised sometimes by the reactions, though, from the crowd. And if the Kaepernick stuff, I get that. But I suppose then the president gets to a point where he's just whipping the crowd. And if he reads from the phone book, at some point they're all going to cheer without fully thinking, wait a minute, our sons play football, too. Should we be protecting their heads? Or what? Why are we cheering? Honey, why are we cheering now? Yay! USA! What did he say? I think there's a little bit of that going on. Otherwise, I can't explain it.
He essentially called everybody who kneels during the anthem a son of a bleep.
He did that, and I don't know why Colin Kaepernick is all of a sudden on his radar, because that's specifically who he's talking about. And he said those people shouldn't be allowed to play in the NFL. Well, guess what? Colin Kaepernick is unemployed. How that became an issue right now for the president, why that became something to help Luther Strange become a senator, is strange.
But I think Trump does understand his base. I think he has a way of connecting with them on a level that transcends policy, because he wasn't a policy candidate, you know, per se. So, you know, he knows how to get those cheers going. And if he gets them to agree in that way, I think he has like an 80% approval rating in Luther Strange country. So
that's right. So you translate that to that. You just take all of that cheering, forget about what we're cheering about, and stick it on Strange. And
I think that is the convoluted strategy.
Brian Tallarico joins us now on WGN Radio. Not for the first time. Always a pleasure to have you on the show, Brian. How are you this morning?
Thanks. That was quite an intro. I'm here wanting to jump in on all the Trump Kaepernick stuff.
What do you want to say?
The reason he goes after Kaepernick is because it's easy, because he has very few victories he can point to and get the crowd riled up, and that's one that's easy to go to. It's an easy hot button issue.
I guess so.
And I wonder how he'd feel about Billie Jean King. You like that segue?
Thank you for my producer just went, oh, thank you. Brian is the editor at RogerEbert.com. You read him in a lot of places, maybe Vulture, too. And we asked him to look at a couple of movies for us this week, movies that, in fact, he's already looked at. You were at the Toronto Film Festival a week or two ago, too, right?
Yeah, I saw both films there, actually.
So let's just start with a couple. And here's the hook that I asked you to hang on with me today, and that is there's a few real-life stories that we're seeing about on TV and the movies this week. The Battle of the Sexes, the match between Billie Jean King and Bobby Riggs, also the story of one of the victims of the Boston Marathon bombing, and for that matter, Ken Burns' Vietnam. All of those things that happened in real life, and we're being asked to sort of experience and sort fact from fiction on them. I'm going to start with Battle of the Sexes. This is the Emma Stone, Steve Carell movie, part of which goes like, ready, Griff, give me a thumbs up, part of which goes like this.
Hello?
Eureka, Billie Jean!
It's Bobby Riggs. I had a great idea. Male chauvinist pig versus hairy leg feminist.
You're still a feminist, right?
I'm a tennis player who happens to be a woman.
Don't hang up.
By the way, I shave my legs.
Billie Jean King, already a champion of women's rights, is now the most successful female player of all time.
I am not saying that women don't belong on the court. Who would pick up the balls otherwise?
Oh, my God.
Now, don't get me wrong. I love women in the bedroom and in the kitchen.
What are you talking, Bobby?
40 million people are watching.
The battle you've all been waiting to see.
No, I'm done talking. Let's play.
The battle of the sexes.
It was the largest crowd to ever personally witness a tennis match. 30,000 people in the Astrodome, watched by 90 million people, Howard Cosell reminded us, worldwide. This happened in our lifetimes, ladies and gentlemen, 1973. So there's Emma Stone as Bobby, as Billie Jean King. What'd you think of the movie?
I think it's okay. That sound bite makes it sound like way more of a lighthearted comedy than it is. It's got the few funny Steve Carell bits in it, but people should know it's more, it takes its subject more seriously, but yet not quite seriously enough. I think Emma Stone is really good, but it's got some tonal issues. It can't figure out Bobby Riggs. It can't decide if Bobby Riggs was this horrible, awful, sexist human being or someone or a sad sack just looking for a bit. And so he kind of becomes a hard character to pin down and figure out. I really think I would have been liked it more if it was just Billie Jean King's story, because her story is great. But I think Bobby Riggs is too much for the movie to handle tonally. You know what I mean? It goes from like, hey, he's wacky, to, oh my God, he's awful in the beat of a second. And you can't figure out what the movie's trying to say about him. And then so all the characters around him kind of become archetypes. Like his wife, played by Elizabeth Shue, is just a non-character. Like, every time it went to him, I got less interested in the film, believe it or not. I think Stone, because it's really more Billie Jean King's story, if you think about it. It's about overcoming issues that are still dealt with today. Even if you think Bobby Riggs was just a sad sack showman, the movie's trying to make a statement about gender rights and equality. And it gets really tender and interesting when it talks about her sexuality. It includes a coming out story, her first love interest with a woman. So it's got a lot of really dramatic beats that are then offset by, hey, look how wacky Steve Carell is.
You know, I didn't see the movie, but I wonder if part of the problem is that Billie Jean King herself didn't know how to play that moment either. I mean, she was complicit in the battle of the sexes narrative, even though she is the feminist in the story.
Right. Although the movie makes the argument she knew she had to be, because what happened was Bobby beat someone or played someone else first and beat her easily. Margaret Court.
Yeah.
And so that's all. And so then at that point, the movie makes the case that Billie Jean knew she had to do it because she was the number one remaining after Margaret. And that if he kept doing this, it would just diminish her profession as a whole. I guess what I would say overall is it's an okay film. It might lead people to the bigger story, but some of it's a little too broad. It looks too much like a TV movie. You know what I mean? It kind of plays like a TV movie. And I guess when I was in Toronto seeing a lot of other more highbrow artistic ventures, it kind of felt a little flat for me. I wanted it to hit a little harder.
All right, I'll leave that movie after I just give you one other thing to bite on. A friend of mine here at work said, really? Emma Stone as Billie Jean King, the most beautiful woman in the world. We could not. Does Emma Stone have to get all of the parts? We could not find somebody else more convincing physically, if nothing else, to play Billie Jean King. What do you think of that notion?
You know what? I was a little in the same boat. I was a little tired of Emma Stone, especially after all the La La Land stuff. But she actually does a very good job. It's a very subdued performance because she's, as I said, she plays a chapter in King's life, and as you said, where she didn't quite know what was going on. Like, she falls in love with a woman for the first time. She's thrust into the spotlight, and she's generally a shy person. So she plays her rather subdued, focused on her, what she's best at, and trying to figure out her place in the world. And she does a good job. She's, her performance and a woman named Andrea Riseborough, their performances are the best thing about the film.
So the movie Stronger opens this weekend, too. It's the story of Jeff Bauman, who is one of the 2013 Boston Marathon bombing victims. He was a Costco deli worker, and he was near the finish line, evidently, during the Boston Marathon that year. He was there to cheer on his girlfriend. The explosion goes off. He becomes a double above-the-knee amputee. It's Jake Gyllenhaal. I'll quote your colleague Michael Phillips now. It's Jake Gyllenhaal's finest, truest 2 hours on film.
There was an explosion, and your legs, they're gone, bro.
There was this time in the hospital when, like, I just want to give up. And we'll
rise up. Look at this! Boston Strong!
And now, I just want to live.
I just want people to see how amazing my son is.
I'm going to walk. You know, I'm going to walk with you again someday.
I'm predisposed to not like either of these kinds of movies. I know how they're going to end. I know they're going to be inspirational. I know there's going to be soaring music, and I don't know that I need to do that. I think I've already got that. What do I get from this movie that I didn't have before?
Oh, that's an interesting lead. I like that. I would say the inspiration works. but we can get back to that. But what you get from this movie that you haven't gotten before actually is, believe it or not, a really interesting intellectual subcurrent of why inspirational stories and inspirational figures matter. It's not the kind of thing you can put in previews, but there's a subtext to this film in which Jeff can't figure out why he's a hero. He can't figure out what, as he says, I was just standing there. And like what do the words Boston Strong actually mean? So the idea, the commodification of heroism,
right,
and what strongness means to people becomes a really interesting intellectual discourse going on underneath this film. And then, without spoiling anything, it kind of subverts it and makes the case that we need people like this. We need to believe people can survive unspeakable situations. And so it kind of justifies the slogan, if you will, or the logo of Boston Strong. I think it's a really good film.
We put these kinds of victims on pedestals, and I haven't seen this film yet either, but my understanding was that this young man did not embrace the hero status that he suddenly had.
Right, and I find that part of the film very interesting, especially because it's a film designed to be inspirational on its own. You know what I mean? It is in itself a property of trying to inspire people and make them feel better.
Yeah.
And but what, again, without spoiling where it goes or the lessons he learns, it kind of makes the case that we need stuff like this in the world. We need things to hold on to. We need pegs. We need comfort, that things will be okay. And it does it in a very convincing way. And on top of all of that, I don't want to make it sound too highbrow, Jake and Tatiana Maslany are both just phenomenally grounded, great performers. So they sell the realism of it. And then there's lots of more interesting stuff layered on top of that.
Well, when I saw the interviews and some of the trailers this week, not the trailers, but the interviews, and the more I read about the backstory, the more I thought, okay, I actually think I will go see this movie. This is the better of the two, it sounds like, huh?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Did you watch the have you been, you know, nobody's watched all 18 hours. I think you can online, but that's asking a lot. How much of Ken Burns' Vietnam have you seen on PBS this week?
Three episodes.
Okay.
So I think that's about 4.5 hours. Actually, just in case anyone out there is really interested, on Blu-ray and DVD, you can already buy all 18. Like, they came out on Tuesday before they had all even aired. So if you wanted to, and your library may even have it, they're all available on Blu-ray and DVD.
I think if you've seen three episodes, I think you've seen I think you've seen 1.5 plus 2 plus 1.5. I think you've seen 5 hours. Anyway, you've seen three, and I want to just talk to you a little bit about how good or not Ken Burns' presentation of the Vietnam War is in just a minute, because I always respect the observations of Brian Tellerico from RogerEbert.com. At 10:25 after the news with Domati in a few minutes, we'll visit with a friend of mine, Joe Orsolini, who is an expert on college aid and college planning. You are right now maybe working on where your kids are going to go to school and how you're going to pay for it. You know somebody in that boat, you're going to appreciate the next half hour. Brian Tellerico joins us. He's at RogerEbert.com. We've been talking about movies. He also watches TV critically. What's your overall assessment of the Ken Burns documentary series as you've seen it so far?
I think it's excellent. I'm a big Ken Burns fan. I watched all of the Civil War and baseball, and I think all of jazz. I think the way he constructs, when we should give Lynn Novick credit, she gets co-director credit.
Yeah.
The way they construct their documentaries is really breathtaking. It's not just the, I mean, hours doesn't seem right, days of archival material they have to go through, hundreds of hours of archival material, but then the way they edit it and the way they construct it, that becomes mesmerizing. I mean, I don't know about you, but for me, these things go by in the blink of an eye. They don't feel nearly as long as they are. You said the second one was 2 hours, and I blinked for a second there because that surprised me to consider. I find them just really easy to watch and easy to understand without feeling like my hand is being held. Like, it's not like it's dumbed down or anything, but he has this amazing balance of being able to convey information in a way that's both intellectual and easy for those of us who aren't well-versed in the Vietnam War, which I'll admit I'm not. And I like the at first I didn't like the construction in which it goes from like current Vietnam veterans discussing stuff during the war and then goes back in history and kind of bounces back and forth. It doesn't go chronological all the time. But now I think it works. It kind of adds to the swirling chaos of what the Vietnam War was, this kind of like quicksand, if you will.
Sure.
And so by bouncing back and forth, it kind of adds to that attention. And I think maybe that was the intent rather than just go ABC, this happened, then this happened. I feel like every technical element is incredible. I mean, I talked about the editing, but Trent Reznor and Atticus Ross's score is really good.
I think about the music in this a lot.
Yeah.
Some of it is original scored. Some of it is
right.
The perfect music for that scene. They spent a lot of time on the music alone. And the detail shows. You know, though, it's interesting because you mentioned the bouncing back and forth. And my take on that was that it continues to make it relevant and continues to make it more interesting. Because I think as you're watching the first 4 hours, say, you're waiting for the shooting to start and America's involvement. And my take on it, Brian, was that it does challenge your patience. You really have to be in this for the 18 hours or however much you can watch, because he doesn't cut to the chase. He spends 3-4 hours telling you about China and France, for crying out loud.
Right.
I don't know why I'm so impatient to see Americans die on the battlefield, but I wanted to see how it resonates with us. I wanted to say one other thing. I think the show is amazing in that it tells us specific battles and battle strategy. You and I know about Iwo Jima, and we know about Midway, and we know about Hiroshima and Pearl Harbor and Dresden. We don't know battles in Vietnam per se, and we just it was this morass. And so there they are going, here's the hill. We had 50 guys. There were 500 Viet Cong, and here's what it was like. When's the last time somebody actually sat you down and told you that? And
no,
boy,
I agree
you feel it, don't you?
I think hundreds of years from now, Ken Burns' films will be important historical documents of major historic events.
That's what this felt like. Absolutely. And so, and I think then maybe sometimes the television of it suffers a little bit for that. He could have cut to the chase sooner, but he's not going to do that.
No. You know what you're getting into with his stuff. I mean, I think baseball was 26 hours or something like that. Like there's no hiding what it is. There's no surprise. But yeah, he spends an hour on stuff that other documentaries would skip over entirely.
Right.
But I think it's better for it. I mean, it's comprehensive is the word. And we don't have a lot of filmmakers in any field working comprehensively nowadays.
Or with the luxury to do it. I mean,
that's true.
Every interview he does, by the way, he says two things. Thank you to PBS. I'm so glad I exist in a commercial free zone. And thank you to Bank of America. He is very smart to go. But by the way, this does not happen without 10 years of work and a lot of money put forward by a company that says, we will not try and influence your take on it. So thank you to the corporate sponsors, because that's how this happens.
That's true. That's a very good point. And we denigrate corporations a lot, but this is a valuable good thing that this corporation and several corporations did.
I think it was Bank of America. Is it Bank of America?
Right. Sounds right. We'll go with that.
Read Brian Tallarico online at RogerEbert.com. And maybe as we get further into the fall and winter movie season, I'll invite you back. It's nice to hear your voice, Brian.
Thank you, John. Take care.
Brian Tallarico. It's 10:31. By the way, Domiti, I wanted to mention there's two big walks that we've been promoting here on WGN Radio for the last several days. One is the American Lung Association Lung Force Walk, and that's going to be at the Oak Brook campus, the McDonald's campus in Oak Brook tomorrow, and I'm going to be heading that one up. So if you're heading out tomorrow, I'll see you in Oak Brook. Today is the Out of the Darkness Into the Light Walk. There will be over 5,000 people. If you wonder, you go by Lakeshore Drive and you wonder, who are all those people? What's going on over there? It's the Suicide Prevention Walk for the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention. The Illinois chapter has one of the biggest walks and silent auctions. And that kicks off this morning, I think at 11 a.m. So in about 20 minutes, they're going to be walking over there. And it is a great walk. And you'll see, this is interesting. People will wear different colored shorts. If you see a white shirt, that means that the person walking in the suicide prevention walk has lost a child. Red means loss of a spouse or partner. Gold means loss of a parent. And everybody has these different colored shirts. Teal means that you have a friend or family member or someone who's struggling. Blue means you're supporting the cause generally. You'll get your T-shirt when you show up, and it's not too late to simply do that. Details for that are at, I'm not seeing the website in front of me, but it's at RV Field in Grant Park, and they're checking people in now, and they kick it off at 11 a.m., and there will be 5,000-plus people. So good on them. It's a great cause. These people are fighting the good fight, And it's something that we don't talk enough about, and we sometimes just don't even know what to do. And they are on the vanguard of that, so props to them. It's 10:41. So I'm John Williams. We're in the Allstate Showcase studio here on Michigan Avenue. Joe Orsolini is in our studio. I don't often invite guests from the weekday show to come back in on the next Saturday, but I did Joe because he's with College Aid Planners, Inc. Joe, welcome back to the show. How are you?
Good. Thanks for having me.
Call right now, 312-981-7200. If you have a question, comment, observation, especially a question about how to pick a college for your kids, maybe you're having this struggle at home, or you're trying to figure out how to finance college for your kids, or maybe you're on the other end of that. You're now wondering how we are going to pay for the college that we didn't sufficiently plan for. You see all of those populations.
Exactly.
You were just telling me off the air, and I don't know if you can share much of this on the air, but anecdotally, what are you seeing walk into your office?
Well, I had two real interesting calls yesterday afternoon. One was from a lady whose son has a significant other that just kind of discovered that she has $200,000 of student loans. She thought she was getting grants. Turns out they're student loans. Was wondering what she should do or tell her son to have.
$200,000. And she thought that was money outright. Now she knows she has to pay for it.
Now she realized she has to pay it back. I mean, that's a common story. It's the
Seriously.
Old, I've had that happen many times.
Give me another anecdote that walked into your door this week.
Another one was a gentleman called me. He had $150,000 of Parent PLUS loans. And he is 67 and wants to retire. But the payment on that PLUS loan is $1,400 a month. That's two-thirds of his Social Security check. And he wanted to know what happens if he stops paying it.
Should parents not sign loans for their kids when they're borrowing money for school?
I strongly discourage parents from adding to the debt.
Really? But the kids sometimes need somebody to co-sign for that loan, don't they?
They do, but they probably should be looking at different schools. You know, that's why this next 5 weeks are so important, because now is when everybody's picking their schools and deciding where they think they may want to go. Starting in November and December, schools start handing out the financial aid. And if it comes back and you find out, hey, this school's I can get in here academically, but it's not going to fit financially, you're out of luck because the schools have handed out all that money. It's like coming home to dinner late. You get what's left over, and there's nothing left over. So if you don't get that right on the front end here in the next 5 weeks, it's going to cause a lot of problems.
I want to be clear what you're saying. If you don't get a sense from the school you and your son or daughter are considering that school is going to give you $10,000 or whatever the amount is, the longer you wait, the less money they're going to have to give you.
If you have to go back and find somebody else. I had a gal in this summer. She wanted to go to University of Iowa. Her divorced mom had no income, zero EFC, expected family contributions. She would get the maximum financial aid. Well, she wanted to go to University of Iowa. She was still going to have to come up with $32,000 to go there, even after all the need-based aid she got. I mean, I had to talk this girl out of going into $120,000 in debt to become a teacher. It made no financial sense. The sad thing was at that point in the year, when she finally realized this in the summer, that was not going to be a good thing, she had no way to scramble back and pick a different school.
Well, I won't judge that family in that situation because we've all seen it too often, but I must say I'm a little mystified by it. So you're going to go $120,000 in debt. Maybe you're going to be a rocket scientist, but maybe you're not. It's amazing to me how many parents and students still sign on the dotted line. Yeah. I tell you, Joe, I get mad at the schools, too, for allowing these families to put themselves in that situation.
Yeah, it's a big problem. I think everybody in this whole business, me, colleges, high schools, everybody's really got to start paying a lot more attention to this on the front end. You know, it's nice to have that big brand name after on your diploma, but it doesn't necessarily help you in life when you're that deep in a hole.
Okay, so the first thing I should do is what?
Well, the first thing is figure out what you can afford to pay for college. You know, if you can pay $100,000, great. If you can only, pay $200 a month, there are options out there. You can find schools that are going to fit that budget.
So that means you're not saying don't borrow money for school.
Well, the kids are always going to borrow a little bit on their own. The federal government lets them borrow $27,000 over the course of 4 years of college. I don't have a problem with that. You know, that's about a $290 a month payment when you graduate. That's doable in most budgets after college. But when you start adding private student loans and six figures, that's really where you start trashing lifestyles.
Okay, but are you saying then that nobody should borrow more than $27,000 over the course of 4 years from the government?
That would be my statement, yes.
Well, sure, that's the ideal scenario. And a lot of people are saying, well, guess what? I don't have that luxury. Mm-hmm. What do you tell the people who say that? I don't have that luxury. I'm going to need to borrow more than $27K.
Yeah. Well, there's certainly other options out there. Community college is one. Look for other schools that are going to fit the budget. Maybe live at home. Housing nationally is between $10,000 to $12,000 a year to live on campus somewhere. You know, especially if you're lower income folks. You know, for example, National Lewis University, if you're get a Pell Grant and a MAP Grant, you can have your full tuition covered.
You can't go to school for $27,000 over 4 years. That's 1 year of college these days,
if you're lucky. You find the right schools, you can.
No, you can't. Where can you go for $27,000 over 4 years? Nowhere. Junior college for 2 years,
junior
maybe.
Junior college. You can do a couple years of junior college.
Skip that. By the way, I'm a junior college graduate. It's the best value out there, so I embrace it. But if I'm committed to 4 years of school, I'm going to need more than $27,000, right? If I want to go to two years of school, I'm going to need more than $27,000.
I mean, if $27,000 is all you have, I mean, there's a couple other things. You've got some tax credits that are going to come in for paying college tuition. You know, that's the American Opportunity Credit's a $2,500 a year credit.
Yeah.
You get four of those over the course of college.
Well, and we're assuming that's the amount that you would borrow, but hopefully you've saved $10,000, $20,000, $500,000, whatever it's going to take. I mean, really, what would be a reasonable expectation for somebody their freshman year going into college? Mm-hmm. I wonder how much on average or how much should I expect to have saved for my college experience?
I'm finding is you probably have to have at least about $25,000 or so to have a shot, because, you know, you've got that. If you've been saving, you've got, you know, as a parent, you've been used to putting a couple hundred bucks away a month. You know, you can turn that cash flow on, and instead of saving it, now you're using it to pay for college. You've got some savings. You've got to have something in the bank, really, so maybe, without making big sacrifices like, hey, I'm going to community college.
So in a perfect world, I've got 25 going in. I would borrow up to about 25. Maybe I would make some money while I'm on campus. Maybe I get some aid. Maybe I get some scholarship mm-hmm. money. A lot of the private schools, if you're a B student, will give you an academic break. Okay, so let's pause. The number's 312-981-7200. I don't mean to discourage. this is the reality. 312-981-7200. You've got a question about financing your kids' college. Joe Orsolini is here. College Aid Planners, Inc. You can follow him on Facebook at College Aid Planners or visit collegeaidplanners.com. We'll take your calls next. 312-981-7200. Joe Orsolini, the College Aid Planning Expert, is in our studio. As we go to the calls, just give me a short answer to this. We have some financial lenders on our radio station. David Hochberg comes to mind. They advise using your home equity to pay for college loans, to help finance college education, even on the backside. Do you mm-hmm. endorse that as well?
Certainly, if you're going to be borrowing somewhere, that's probably one of your best options.
You also think take equity out of your house and pay off that student loan if it's at a higher rate, I guess.
Yes.
And you're probably getting your home loan these days for under 5, I mean, right?
Yep.
So
mm-hmm.
if you're going to pay 5% rather than 10%, 15%, whatever, right?
Yeah, and you know the nice thing is home equity versus, you know, say a plus loan or a private student loan, you know, if issues happen in life, you are out in the streets, you go bankrupt, but that student loan debt never goes away. That parent plus loan never goes away. If something bad happens in life and it's home equity, you're out in the streets, but at least you've gotten rid of that debt. So it's – and, you know, there's tax deductions available for home equity that you're going to phase out at or be limited with a private or parent student loan. So it's much more tax friendly as well.
On line three, this is Peggy. You're on WGN. I'm sorry, Peggy, I'll get to you. This is Christine. Hi, Christine. You're on the air.
Let's see. I have one child. My husband is a college professor. We don't have any major debt except for our home. So we're fortunate in that sense. However, we don't have, you know, there's an advertiser. If you have $500,000, blah, 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 you know, I don't have that money. I'm also 54 years old, as is my husband, so we started late, but we've also started late, so I'm wondering...
How much money, if I may ask, have you saved for your son's college? Okay, so let's say you've got $1,000 in the bank for your son's college.
Sure.
Okay, and he's a freshman in high school?
Yes.
What's the strategy for her?
Well, I think, you know, start saving something. If it's $100, if it's $200, save something, get started saving a little bit of money. Also, you know, if you know you're not going to be able to afford that, you know, full going away to 4-year school experience, start talking to the kids about community college. Put that on the table. Start talking about, hey, maybe we're going to find a school that you can commute to save on the housing piece of it. It's important to start planting those seeds with the kids so that they know there's other options than, hey, I got to be like all my other friends going away to some big expensive school.
Should she be using that Illinois program, those state-sponsored college savings programs?
Certainly those are always a good option to put money away for college. Because they build up tax deferred, they build up tax deferred and come out tax free. So those are certainly a good option. Also, you know, if you're using one of the state of Illinois plans, you do get a tax break on that money going in as well. So that helps out a little bit.
So where is it that I should put the money? That is, if I'm going to save, I've got a little part time gig. I can pull, you know, $300 a month out of that and put it into something. Mm-hmm. Where should I put that money?
Well, at this point, you know, with a freshman in high school, I would look for something, you know, kind of conservative, kind of safe. Certainly, you know, if you're going the college route, looking at the 529s are certainly an option you should maybe look at. Even just something local, putting in a savings account in the bank. You know, it's the most important thing is return of your money, not your return on your money at this point.
Of your money, not on your money, because the market's been going up, 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 up.
Yeah.
And you think, boy, I better get on that and really explode this money some way. Why don't you do that?
The problem is, you know, you don't want to take a hit. You know, 10-15%, which certainly could happen. You know, the markets go up, they go down. When you're this close to college and you know you're going to need that money over a very short period of time, you can't build in a 10-15%
hit. But I feel Christine's frustration. Put it in the bank. Are you kidding me? That pays 0.01%. That's what you're, but at least you don't lose it,
yeah.
Right? Cheryl, Christine, that's his advice.
Thank you.
Thanks for the phone call. Griff, you said Derek is next. Derek, you're on WGN. What did you want to say? Hi.
Hey, John.
Hey.
What's going on? I'm a big fan of your show.
Thank you, sir.
So I was one of the dumb kids when I was 18. I applied for a bunch of private student loans, and I got them, and I graduated. And now I'm paying around, you know, $1,100 a month. I guess my question is there any way to, you know, kind of loosen the noose around my neck?
Yeah, sure. What do you have for him?
Well, you know, I think the thing is, you know, if you've graduated, you know, stay living at home as long as you can. You know, I don't know if that's worse for the students or the parents there. But stay living at home as long as you can and just knock those down as quickly as possible. I mean, the one nice thing about just coming out of college is you're used to living, you know, a lower lifestyle, you know, ramen noodles and all that, you know, good stuff.
Yeah.
Try just work over the next 6 months and just put everything you can into paying off as much of that debt as you can. Because what's happening in the background, that's just growing and growing, compounding. The more sooner you can knock that down, the sooner you can get on with the rest of your life.
It's like any loan, right? If you can get to the principal besides just the interest payment that sometimes they're saying, here's the minimum, you've got to attack the principal. That's the hard part.
Above and beyond the normal $1,100 a month payment you're making.
How many years is that loan structured for? How long are you paying on that, Derek?
I have 4 more years left to pay on it.
Yeah. Well, boy, there's some light at the end of the tunnel.
Yeah.
Boy, you think of the raise you're going to get when you get that thing retired.
Oh, exactly. And, I mean, you know, I'm looking to buy a house. I'm 24. You know, I want to, you know, be successful, you know, have all that, the wife and kids and house and stuff, but...
All right, let me ask you. I got to go, Derek, but here's the last question for you. So you are the future for some of the parents and students out there. Looking back, would you do anything differently, or are you okay with
this? I mean, I had a good experience in college, but I would have went to community college. I would have been, you know, a little more financially savvy about the high-interest loans that I took out. So.
Yeah, that's interesting. Hey, Derek, I appreciate your listening. Good luck to you, and thanks for the call. Joe, we're out of time. Joe Orsolini, collegeaidplanners.com is the website to go for more help and information. Thanks for coming in today.
Thanks, John.
Thank you, Domati. This is John Williams. Yesterday's record high was 89. It got up to 93 by 4 degrees yesterday. We shattered a record that went back to the 1950s. I told people to send me pictures of their dashboard thermometers, and people were sending me ones that were 100 degrees. Then Steve Bertrand got real fussy about whether or not that's a legitimate temperature reading or not. I say it is. He says it's not. But whatever it was yesterday, a very warm day. And more of that to come. So I'll see you at the beach. Sam, we're going to talk a little bit about your NFL picks in this half hour.
Ready.
And maybe we'll play a little of what the president said, only as it relates to sports. It was a remarkable statement last night in Alabama. But first, on Saturdays at this time, we play part of our podcast that we call The Mincing Rascals. It's a combination of WGN Radio's Steve Bertrand, Eric Zorn, often Kristen McQuarrie, though not this week, and Scott Stantis, who is the editorial cartoonist for the Chicago Tribune. And we talked about a bunch of things. I just made a sort of an audible here, if you will, with producer Griffin, and that is, while we talked about a lot of things in the city and state, we also spent some time talking in the podcast. And I want you to hear it, because the gang was really good about the president's speech to the UN. We have just excised that from the rebroadcast here, but you can hear it in its entirety at WGNradio.com, or maybe you subscribe to the Mincing Rascals podcast. It's free. I hope you do download it, because I think those people do really good, insightful work. But for our purposes here, I just want to sort of remind you of what the gang was saying about the possibility of Amazon coming to Chicago, to Illinois anyway, and bringing with it 50,000 jobs that would pay, on average, $100,000 each. So they can go anywhere in the world they want, and maybe Chicago is in the hunt. I asked the gang, what are our advantages? What do we have that's most attractive, maybe, to Jeff Bezos? And what do we have that is most worrisome? Steve Bertrand went first.
A big asset is the city itself, the beauty of the city, the location of it, the transportation of the whole thing. And as far as detriment, I mean, Amazon and Illinois had a rough history, right, over the taxes and things like that. I know it was ultimately resolved, but probably the fiscal situation and the fact that maybe Illinois is not going to be in a position to give away as much as other people might.
As Steve said, I mean, it's a gorgeous city. It's a fabulous city. It has a world-renowned restaurants, has world, you know, a world-class airport, which is one of the prerequisites they wanted. The detriment is massive, and I think a deal killer from the outgo. Taxes are onerous to the extreme. Crime is growing, and violent crime particularly, and schools are terrible. And there's terrible leadership and political leadership in the state.
Schools aren't terrible for people who make more than $100,000 a year.
I could see that, though. If you're going to China, if you are going to put your kids, your employees and their children in any place in the United States, and they had to go to a city that was famous for underperforming public schools and has the reputation as the shootingest place in America, you would be asking yourself, we couldn't go to San Diego, or San Diego's maybe geographically a bad location, but I don't know, St. Louis, which, by the way, has a higher shooting per capita ratio than we do.
Indianapolis had their 100th murder this week.
100th.
I don't know how that compares per capita.
Per capita.
We had our 500th shooting last weekend.
I think
weekend.
The perception shooting of crime is probably the biggest thing.
Well, let me add to the advantages of Chicago, the cultural environment here, the music, the theater, all that other stuff's here. We attract a lot of young people here. A lot of young people are moving to the city. A lot of talent, tech talent. We also have a really good set of universities.
We attract some. We're not nearly as aggressive and as effective as a lot of other cities in America for the reasons I just mentioned.
You know, the lakefront is an asset that we have that is just about unparalleled in any other major city. It would be a great place for them to be. The disadvantages have already been mentioned.
Oh, one more.
Well, let me say, I think
what blanket speaks.
Weather is kind of lousy, but you know, our income tax, state income tax, is still relatively low, even at about 5%. Our state income tax is relatively low.
Buy a soda.
Well, okay. I mean, they clearly are, and I think actually the main thing. I think all those things are, you know, they come out in the wash when you're looking at places, but when you're looking at the financial instability of the future of the state, you know, the pension debt, those kind of things. I think those things will play into their considerations.
You know, people say the weather, but tell me where the weather's so good that you want to move your company and 50,000 people there. You want to go to the Southwest where it's 110 degrees today? Do you want to go to Florida where they have hurricanes?
Want to go to Atlanta where it's so humid?
Right. I mean, St. Louis is – I'll take our weather over St. Louis any day. You got the whole East Coast, which is exposed to more storms, more violent storms now than ever. So tell me where the perfect weather is.
Perfect weather?
San Francisco.
No, that's
you're on the West Coast. And by the way, San Francisco had a heat record this 2 weeks ago. It was 103 degrees.
I was there for it.
It's also
I brought it with me, yeah.
It's also way too expensive, and it's way too close to Seattle. They seem to want to get away from that. One city I'd mention is Nashville. It is hot and humid, but their winters are mild. The summers aren't, you know, deathly, and it has an international airport, and it's a booming community.
And we should give them the whatever they want, too, right? Like any kind of infrastructure, any kind of tax incentives, any kind of tax breaks.
I came here from the Birmingham News in Alabama, and Alabama went through this very thing. There's a very aggressive bidding for a Mercedes plant. They won it. Everyone was, you know, whining that they gave away the store. Well, what's happened in the meantime over the last decade is they've gotten three new automobile plants. They have
really?
Airbus is now going to produce its first airplane later this year in Mobile. So it's created itself as and positioned itself as a manufacturing base for the country.
You know what I think maybe I'm doing, Scott, is apples and oranges. But having moved here recently from Minnesota and having witnessed how the state of Minnesota gave to a set of billionaire brothers everything for the funding of a football stadium. So they have a $1 billion stadium that the billion-dollar brothers were virtually given by the state so that we could keep the Minnesota Vikings. Because
right.
the Vikings, the same way Amazon could say, said, we'll go somewhere else if you don't give us what we want. We'll move the team to Los Angeles or Las Vegas. We'll go somewhere else. So you build them the stadium to keep the team, and then you're sort of glad they're there, but you also have a bad taste in your mouth.
Well, that's third-rate field or you know, the cell was the same thing. It was
state-funded. Third-rate field. I don't think that's the name of it.
Comiskey.
Guaranteed rate field.
Guaranteed rate field.
Comiskey.
One other thing, though,
sure.
that we haven't talked about is this theory, the opposite theory, that all of these jobs coming in, these high-paying jobs, will increase the cost of living, increase the cost of housing, and actually be bad for lower-income people because the cost of living here will go up so much.
We need to get to our recommendations.
Yeah, I fell kind of down the rabbit hole. I've been listening to the Avett Brothers a lot lately. Have you listened to them at all?
Avett Brothers?
Avett. A-V-E-T-T. And doing that on Pandora, a lot of John Prine came up. And so I started pursuing John Prine. And there's a song called Clay Pigeons that I really like from John Prine. And so I think that's what Elif is going to put up on the website, this song Clay Pigeons. It's about a guy who just sort of seems overwhelmed by his nasty life. And he says, I'm going to go sit on a Greyhound bus for a couple of days, let the sun come up and down, smoke cigarettes in the back seat, and talk when I'm ready to talk again. It's really, I'm not sure exactly what the song's about, but I love it. And so then I looked, and it was written by a guy named Blaze Foley. Anyone heard of Blaze Foley? Mm-hmm. Blaze Foley's this guy born in 49. He was murdered in 1989, and he wrote the song. And was this Merle wrote songs for Merle Haggard and elsewhere.
Yeah, right.
So all of that. So my recommendation is to find a version of Clay Pigeons by John Prine and enjoy it.
I'm only a fine man, a lady with two or three kids and sit down by her side. I ride till the sun comes up and down around about two or three times. Smoking cigarettes in her last seat. Sing the song for the people of me. And get along with it all. But where the people say, y'all, I sing a song with a friend. Change the shape that I'm in. And get back in the game and start playing again. I'd like to stay, but I might have to go to start over again. I might go back down to Texas. Or go to somewhere that I've never been. And get up in the morning and go out at night and I won't have to go home. Get used to being alone. Change the words to this song and start singing again.
Thank you for that recommendation, Steve Bertrand. John Prine's Clay Pigeons. Yeah, now I'm going to go look for that, too. Thank you, Steve. That's part of our Mincing Rascals podcast. You can find it at WGNradio.com. Download it, too. Mincing Rascals. It's 11:18. A couple of sports notes for you from Sam Panionovich. That's coming up next. Is Bill Murray in town? Do we know? He might be. I think I just saw Bill Murray walk by. Or his doppelganger. This guy walked by, and he kind of looked in the window and waved, and he had that kind of funny Bill Murray smirk on his face, like, hey, I might just say hi to you guys on the radio.
And you let him go?
Well,
I was out of the room for 2 seconds, and you let Bill Murray slip by? Wow.
Well, I've had a bad week with doppelgangers because I was doing the show this week, Griff, you don't know this, and Stephanie, our executive producer, came storming into the studio and then storming out, and she and Elif, my regular producer, were kind of very much in a buzz, and then Elif in my ear says, Salman Rushdie's in the building. Do you want to talk to Salman Rushdie? And I was in the middle of a completely different conversation. We weren't talking about, say, satanic verses at the time. And so now I'm trying to have this conversation on the air, and also I'm loading up a sort of all of the sudden Salman Rushdie conversation that I'm about to have. And so I kind of did, and I kind of didn't want to talk to Salman Rushdie. I've never talked to Salman Rushdie before.
Is it Rushdie or Rushdie?
Exactly. That's my problem. I don't even know how to say his last name.
I was going to let it slide, but it keeps being said.
By me.
By you.
So maybe it's Rushdie.
I'm not sure.
I would have asked him, first question, what was Padma like? Because she, from Top Chef, was his third wife. And that's all I could tell from Wikipedia. So anyway, then, a couple minutes later, as I'm sitting here, I see a guy walk by. And he looks just like Salman Rushdie. I go, holy cow. It wasn't Salman Rushdie. They went up to him and they said, Mr. Rushdie, we have a talk. So he goes, I'm Joe from Orland Park. He wasn't Salman Rushdie. He was just the guy who probably gets that wherever he goes.
Wait, this is confusing. So he was, but the real one was in the building itself.
No, he was not.
No, okay, so you weren't the one that mistook him.
No, somebody else did.
Wow.
And so they come storming in here going, holy cow. And I appreciate that. Like, if Salman Rushdie or Bill Murray were in the building, I would say, you didn't tell me? Come on. So they went after Joe from Orland Park, but it was really not Salman Rushdie, which is very, that's a very, that's a kind of like,
wow.
Oh, wow. Because I don't know that telling somebody that they look like Salman Rushdie is a huge compliment to begin with. That's just how that played out.
Okay.
Roundabout way of saying that may be why I let Bill Murray go. Sam Panionovic, WGN Radio Sports, has been picking games. What's the name of this pool that you're in, Sam?
Westgate Super Contest in Las Vegas.
You and 12,000 people, how many?
2,700.
2,700 people are picking games each week. You get to pick five NFL games that you're most confident in, but you have to pick them by the spread. You
right.
don't just have to pick the outcome. You need to tell us if they cover or not. So we are out of 10 games picked.
6-3-1.
6-3-1. And we are in what percent across the country?
7%. We're in the top 7%. We're in 206th place. And if we go 5-0, I think we'll be in first this week.
You said that last week. Okay.
Well, we went 3-2.
Which is just goes to show how difficult this is to do.
Yeah, and Bertrand's logo, 60% is a D. And I said, in Vegas, it's an A. If you can hit 60%, that's really good.
You're making money then. All right, so give me a game that you would bet on this week.
All right, well, let's start at the top. Why shouldn't we? I took the Bears week one,
yep.
right?
Yep.
Then I went against the Bears in week two.
Right.
To the dismay of that security guard at the United Center. I'm going with the Bears this weekend. I'm going to plug my nose. I'm going to take 7 points with the Bears at home. What do you think?
So the Bears will win.
No, cover. You can lose by 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7.
Win or lose by less than 7.
Yes.
And who are we playing?
Pittsburgh.
Okay. Yeah, I'm with you. It's hard to believe anybody would bet even with 7 points in their pocket on that team. But you're going to do that.
I read every article in the Chicago papers. I don't think anybody has it closer than 10. And when that happens, John, we go the other way.
Okay.
We did it last week, too.
They asked Mike Glenn, or they asked Joe Fox, right?
John Fox,
about Mike Glennon. And he sort of poo-pooed the idea that the quarterback would be on a short leash. That's what he has to say. Of course he's on a short leash.
No, but, I really don't know how many leashes we got on people, but...
I don't know how many leashes we got on people.
But, I mean, if you're going to walk him out for even the first play, you want to hope that he's there for the last play. And the only way to do that is to throw all of the public support you can for him, even though you and the coaches are going, he's out after one quarter if we're down by more than 10. We are not going to do that again, right? I mean, that's the reality of it, don't you think?
I agree. And that's built into the play, too. I think this is Mike Glennon's last chance. And
okay.
If he doesn't play well this Sunday, that leash may come off.
Bears, Pittsburgh, we're taking the Bears in 7. What else you got?
I got the Vikings +3 at home. They have a backup quarterback. I still don't care. That defense, as we saw on Monday night in week one, they are very good. And in that dome, you know that dome well as well. It's tough to play there. Tampa looked really good against the Bears. They're going up in the dome. I like the Vikings +3.
Rooting for the Vikings. Give me another game.
Atlanta. I think they're the class of the NFC. They really wiped the floor with Green Bay on Sunday night. They're playing at Detroit. Detroit 2-0, but I'm not sure about the teams Detroit has beaten. They beat the Giants. The Giants suck.
How many points have I been given here?
Atlanta has to win by three or more.
Oh, I'll take that too. Good.
Okay.
Atlanta.
My team this year, also we took them last week. The Redskins, they're at home, Sunday Night Football. They're getting 3 points against the Raiders. The Raiders are 2-0. They have to go all the way across the country and play on Sunday night. Everybody's on the Raiders. We are on the Washington Redskins, plus +3.
One more.
When the Packers lose, the Packers usually annihilate their next opponent. The Packers lost on Sunday night. They're at home laying 8.5 against the Bengals. We like the Packers.
Bears, Vikings, Atlanta, Washington, and Green Bay.
Yep. Four home teams.
Steph Curry said that he's not going to go to the White House with the team. My understanding is the White House hasn't officially invited the Golden State Warriors, but they will. Steph Curry said not only is now he not going to go, but he doesn't think the team should go. And the team said, if I'm not mistaken, Sam, that they are going to have a meeting to decide if, in fact, they will accept an invitation if it's offered.
They were going to consider it. But this morning, 7:45 a.m., at Real Donald Trump, quote, "Going to the White House is considered a great honor for a championship team. Stephen Curry's hesitating. The invitation is withdrawn."
Yeah. Exclamation point. Withdrawn! You're supposed to do it that way. The invitation is withdrawn.
Withdrawn!
So, is the invitation withdrawn to Steph or to the whole team? Do you know?
The whole team.
But really? You read that to mean the whole team?
Yes.
So the White House has officially, at least the president, has officially uninvited the Golden State Warriors because of what Steph said?
He's gone after the NFL and the NBA in the last 24 hours.
Here's what he said about the NFL. This will take about 2 minutes, but it's positively remarkable, and then we'll get to the news. If you missed it, if you weren't listening to or watching the president's 80-minute speech in Huntsville last night, the president said this. No, you don't see it, Griff? I'm sorry. I thought we had it ready to roll.
Love to see one of these NFL owners, when somebody disrespects our flag, to say, get that son of a bitch off the field right now. Out. He's fired. He's fired! You know, some owner's going to do that. He's going to say, that guy that disrespects our flag, he's fired. And that owner, they don't know it. They don't know it. They're friends of mine, many of them. They don't know it. They'll be the most popular person for a week. They'll be the most popular person in this country because that's a total disrespect of our heritage. That's a total disrespect of everything that we stand for, okay? Everything that we stand for. And I know we have freedoms and we have freedom of choice and many, many different freedoms. But you know what? It's still totally disrespectful. And you know, when the NFL ratings are down massively, Now, the number one reason happens to be that they like watching what's happening on, you know, with yours truly. This because, you know, today, if you hit too hard, right? They hit too hard. 15 yards, throw him out of the game. They had that last week. I watched for a couple of minutes. And two guys just really beautiful tackle. Boom, 15 yards. The referee gets on television. His wife is sitting at home. She's so proud of him. They're ruining the game. Right? They're ruining the game. Hey, look, that's what they want to do. They want to hit, okay? They want to hit. But it is hurting the game. But you know what's hurting the game more than that? When people like yourselves turn on television and you see those people taking the knee when they're playing our great national anthem. The only thing you could do better is if you see it, even if it's one player, leave the stadium. I guarantee things will stop. Things will stop. Just pick up and leave.
Sounds like a game show, doesn't it? That's the president endorsing Luther Strange for Senate. It's 11:31. WGN Radio News comes your way next. Hank and Domitia, it's 11:40. This is our Vibe Score segment where we take a look at some things going on in the world around us that we haven't otherwise covered on the show. Producer Griff's in charge. By the way, Griff, you can turn it down on your end, the Vibe Score music. I've got it on mine. Thank you very much. So what were we listening to there, Griff?
That was a song called Bike Dream by Rostam.
It sounded a little scratchy or grungy. Was that the way they recorded it, or was that just the version we found?
That was intentional.
Really? Are you kidding me?
I'm not going to play you crappy audio on WGN radio. It's the best I could do.
I'm sorry, because I know sometimes...
That's why you cut it short, too.
A little bit. I thought... By the way, I guess that's my editorial comment on the
music. I can always tell if you like it or not. If I got 25 seconds. I don't think you liked it.
I hate to be so predictable, but if it's not pleasant to listen to, then I'm not going to listen to a lot more of it.
Well, I think this is the seed of a budding disagreement here, because that was Rostam Batmanglish. He's the former keyboardist producer from Vampire Weekend.
Oh, I love Vampire Weekend.
He left the band after their third album to, you know, pursue other producing and then a solo career. Now he just
produced Distorted Music. Go ahead. Well, sure.
He put out an album last year with a guy named Hamilton Liedhauser, the former lead singer of The Walkmen. Now he's got his first solo LP. It's called Half Light. Came out on the 15th. I love it.
Okay.
And I love this song.
Should I give it another chance? Do you want to play a little more of it for us here? I can turn my music down if you want to turn yours back
up.
That's
okay. You heard what you needed to hear. You didn't like it.
If he asked me, I'd say there's not a lot going on here, and it's my ears. I don't like what's happening in my ears.
I like the very fuzzy, sort of dreamy quality.
Fuzzy and dreamy.
Of this song and other songs on the album. But it spans a bunch of different kinds of sounds.
Okay, well, we're going to keep going forward, but before this half hour's out, I'm just going to ask you to cue it back up. Not right now, but before this half hour's up, and we'll just give it one more breath of fresh air.
Sounds good.
On a scale of 1 to 100, though, and that's what we do in the Vibe Score segment, I'm giving it a 17. It's badly produced.
I give it a 95.
Fine. Domati.
I love it.
Chime in, please.
Production quality aside, I give it a 70. I kind of liked it.
It's catchy.
Salmon Sports, go!
40.
You get beat up over there, Griff.
One thing to keep in mind, the production quality is part of the point. It doesn't it's not like, well, yeah, he needs to give it another go in the studio, but this the tune, it might be okay. No, that's part of
that was
it was
idea.
Supposed to sound like
I know that. I know that. All right,
but fine. You didn't like it. That fair enough. We're allowed to have differing opinions. In fact, that is the point of the Vibe Score segment.
Okay. Yes.
In sports, actually, I wanted to talk a little bit more about the NBA and Twitter, but not about Steph Curry, about his teammate Kevin Durant. Sam Domati, did you guys see what happened with Kevin Durant on Twitter earlier this week?
Yes.
I actually did not.
I don't think he got enough attention.
What is this all about? I don't know anything about it.
Oh, it's so good.
You don't know anything about this?
Kevin Durant tweeted something?
Do you want to explain it, Sam? It's kind of tricky to explain, but
he's got burner accounts. So he defends himself from different accounts that he's created.
So what happened is somebody tweeted at him, and I'll just read the exchange. Somebody responded to a Kevin Durant tweet and said, "Man, I respect you, but give me one legitimate reason for leaving OKC other than getting a championship." And he responded from his official Kevin Durant account.
He forgot to switch back to his real account, John.
That's what people are theorizing. But here's the response as he wrote it from Kevin Durant. He didn't like the organization or playing for Billy Donovan. His roster wasn't that good. It was just him and Russ. Imagine taking Russ off that team. See how bad they were. KD can't win a championship with those cats. But that's from Kevin Durant. So, and then he quickly deleted those tweets, but somebody got a screenshot. So what people think is that he has secret accounts.
He does.
That he
people
tweets.
Don't think he does.
I mean, those are called burner accounts?
Yes.
Sure, yeah.
Like a burner phone.
Wow. Like a burner phone, a burner account.
Got it.
Where he defends himself from trolls. And then...
So people that give it, so he wants to sound off, but he knows he can't as Kevin Durant, so he creates a persona.
Yeah.
What's that account called? Is it Joe Blow, or does it come in the guise of Kevin Durant?
Well, no one knows what those accounts are, but we know from these tweets that he accidentally tweeted from himself.
Okay, but to be clear, then when he tweets back at these people, he's not intending that for public consumption then?
He's not trying to make it look like he's tweeting it from his personal account.
Yeah.
He's trying to tweet it from an account like... you know, John W. 1234567.
Yeah.
Like a random person on Twitter just defending Kevin Durant, but he forgot to switch the account over.
so he tweeted
it from the Kevin Durant Twitter account.
To create the appearance of, look at all these people
it's
who
confusing
are,
will and it's
rise
silly.
Up and defend me.
But it's a little like reply all when you really meant it to go to one person and then you can't pull it back. Oh, gee, I'm sorry. I didn't want everybody to know that's how I felt.
Although the first time I sent a reply all email here,
yeah,
that was the first time I got on the John Williams show.
How about that? How about that? What was the reply all to?
Oh, they were the Cubs were giving away another championship ring in like August, and yes. I replied all to the whole staff and said, "Give me a break."
And you're trying to send it to me.
Oh, yes. You weren't into that, Sam? That's weird.
And here we
like
are. Here we are.
So, what is your point about all of this, Griffin?
Well, I just want to ask, how embarrassing for Kevin Durant do you think this is? Because to me, this is like 5,000.
Really?
I think it's the funniest thing. But the difficulty that we had explaining it to you, no, it signifies to me that why it wasn't a bigger story.
Right, right, right.
And I this whole week, I'm like, why is this not a bigger story? Well, this is so funny.
Well, you know, I don't know. North Korea exploded a hydrogen bomb, so there's that, too.
Fair enough, but...
maybe, though, Griff, it's like once outed. I mean, the only embarrassing thing is that you don't know how to work your phone, right?
No, but it's embarrassing that he...
felt those things... Maybe he can embrace the truthiness of it and say, okay, busted, but yeah, that's the deal. That's the deal.
That's the deal. I create fake accounts to make it look like I have more supporters than I do.
Oh.
It's just like, think that he would be, you know, you imagine that these athletes are people that they've got enough, they rise above these things. And I love that he's, you know, petty enough to just...
Everybody has fake followers, though.
Mix it up.
Just as a sidebar note, President Trump's 34 million followers, over half of those are not real people. Those are not real accounts. I have 2,000 followers, maybe only 17. You know, maybe I don't have as many as it demonstrates. Okay, 1 to 100. 100, it's super embarrassing. Griffin gives it 1,000. 5,000, I believe, is the number.
Yeah.
Sam?
90. It's pretty bad.
still not able to embrace what we're talking about. I'm giving it a 17. I think it's kind of cool.
No, you have no
idea. Like
just talking at a wall. Domiti, did you know? You didn't know about this story before.
I vaguely saw this story. Once you started to tell it, I started to remember. I wish I was rich enough and bored enough to create multiple accounts. So for that reason alone, I'm giving it a 100.
There you go. Got him back after the song debacle. Okay.
Give me one more, Griff.
In TV, well, you've been watching the Vietnam War. I take you've been enjoying it.
Yeah.
Would you score it?
I will. On a scale of 1 to 100, although I think I've been clear that it's also a bit of a slog. He's not making it easy. I'm giving it a 90. Maybe I'm giving it an 89. 89.
I'd be around there, too.
Yeah, you've seen as much of it as I have. So, really, you have some of the same feelings
I think
I do?
I think you've seen a little bit more than I have. But, yeah,
perhaps.
No, it's fantastic.
Actually, I have seen a little more, but it's really good. But when you watch it, you get the feeling that I am watching a little bit of 18 hours. So, as a television product, it requires patience. And I don't know that that's the best way to communicate things to people these days, an 18-hour show. Our guest earlier, Brian Tellerico, said this will be remembered as a great historical document. Totally get that. As a TV production, I'm just slightly underwhelmed. I'm giving it an 89. There I am.
Yeah, I think that, well, there's something antithetical to the idea of like getting psyched for a Ken Burns documentary, which we have been doing for a couple months, right? Like he's got a new one coming out.
They've been promoting it a lot.
Get ready. And then did you stop to remind yourself what a Ken Burns documentary is? This is what it is. Like, it's photographs and you move from one side of the photograph to the other.
And Peter Coyote tells you about it. That's,
yeah.
That's a Ken Burns documentary.
And they're great for what they are, but maybe you forgot what it is. And then as you remember, it's like, okay, this
right.
is still really good, though.
Yeah, it is.
And so far, I think it's been very good.
It's 11:49. We got to get to a couple of other things. Anything else you want to bounce off of us before we do?
No.
I thank you, Producer Griffin, for all of that. We'll pause here. There's a few things going on in town, including the Hyde Park Jazz Fest this weekend. There's a couple of walks and runs that you may need to know about. And our own Domiti Pongo will be starring on stage this weekend. Details all coming up. Okay, I've given this a fair shake. You guys are not listening to the same music I am. Are you serious, Griffin? You think this is pretty dang good? I mean, I'm sorry.
I loved it. I never thought this, like, sort of...
All right, you can turn your music down.
Catchy,
turn the music down!
Little tune would engender such a hostile
response. I'll come right
response.
Up there. You kids, turn that down!
I didn't think you'd like it as much as me, but I did not think you'd be angry about this lackadaisical sort of
It has
shimmy.
A little bit of the lyrical approach that a Vampire Weekend song would. I believe you described it as dreamy. I get that.
Which is funny because he didn't write most of the lyrics.
Did he sing the songs for Vampire Weekend?
No.
Okay, but I can hear that in there.
Yeah, you can tell.
Why did he think that the fuzziness of that would be a good idea? I don't even know why that's funny.
Because it was a good idea. I love this album.
You can listen to that. And
run
go,
out.
If you were
walk,
in a car.
Run, don't walk to buy Half Light. At the Tower Records near you at the Borders bookstore.
Okay, fine. Yeah, I've been known to be wrong about everything. So what is the name of the artist in the album?
Rostam. R-O-S-T-A-M.
I believe that's a part of the human anatomy. Rostam. R-O-S-T-A-M. And
it's also his first name. And the song is called Bike Dream.
Bike Dream. A couple of things going on in town this weekend. So there are walks today and tomorrow that we here at WGN Radio are happy to be part of. The Out of the Darkness Into the Light walk is going on right now over at Grant Park. They kicked it off at 11, and they're still doing it. If you see thousands, maybe 5 to 10,000 people over by Grant Park, they are helping to stamp out or support people who have been affected, their family somehow, by suicide. It's about mental health awareness. Good for them. I'm going to be walking with the American Lung Association tomorrow at 10 in the morning out at the McDonald's campus in Oak Brook. We will be marching for the American Lung Association. Lung cancer is the number one cancer killer of women, more than breast cancer colon cancer combined. It's terrible. We're going to be walking out there, and I hope that you can join us. You can sign up at the event. Doma T. Pongo is actually going to be emceeing an event this weekend. Am I right about that, Doma T.?
That is true.
Saw your name on something. What are you doing?
So it's the 52nd annual art auction to support the Southside Community Arts Center. Now, this area is really, really integral to Chicago's history. So it started by Dr. Margaret Burroughs, the Southside Community Arts Center. And tomorrow would have been her 100th birthday. Now, who she was, she founded the DuSable Museum of African American History. And it started out of the Southside Community Arts Center in Bronzeville. So what we're doing tomorrow is an annual art auction, which is their main fundraising event. It's going to be fun. We've got Val Warner's art from Windy City Live. She's actually a painter, too. We've got actor Tim Reed coming out. He's going to be hosting some events, and we've got – it's just going to be a ton of fun. Harry
Tim
Lennox.
Reed from Venus Flytrap.
Yes.
I read his bio this week. That guy has been busy. He's had a full career after WKRP. Interesting to see that story. Okay, so where do we find you up on stage then, Doma T?
So it's going to be at the South Shore Cultural Center tomorrow night from 5 p.m. to 9 p.m.
You'll be emceeing and doing some auctioneering?
I'm going to try to practice my auctioneer's voice. I got to figure out how to do this, John. I don't know if you can help me, but I have
done some auctioneering before. We do the hey, buddy, 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 that sort of thing?
That sort of thing. That's what I'll be doing.
Yeah.
So hear me fumble and mumble and try to do that thing. But it's going to be fun. This is a really, really important community event. And I'm really happy that it came across your desk, too.
By the way, speaking of stuff on the South Side, Brenda and I are heading with some friends after the show today over to the Hyde Park Jazz Festival. Go to HydeParkJazzFestival.org, and you'll get the schedule and details there. Wow, do they have a good day for it. And I hear, I've never been, but friends of mine say it's just awesome. So we'll see you over in the Hyde Park area this afternoon.